Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo.
Let's get it started. Let's get it started.
What's up, everybody? Let's welcome aboard. Let's get it started. Xander and Bubba. And what is going on, everybody? It's a big sports weekend. A lot of things going on. And, of course, what's up, Xander?
Not much. You know, we got a lot of interesting things going on in the sports world right now. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, MLB season starting to take shape. We just finished the NFL draft, so, I mean, a lot of stuff going on. You know, first I thought we could touch on the Kentucky Derby happening later today. What do you think of the race? Who do you like, and what are you looking to bet on?
Well, I love the race. Obviously, it's a little over-exaggerated because of all the pageantry, and I'm a big horse racing fan. But I do like the race, and it's enjoyable, and, of course, it's a huge field. You know, once again, and it promises to be a sloppy track, which always brings out a little bit more fun. And but I'm looking at Creator, the three horse. I think that I will never play the favorite. I think Nyquist is the favorite, and for me, for my money, you know, in a big field like this, I'm not looking for a short price horse. I'm looking to get some action for my money, right? I mean, you know, you get these big fields, anything can happen. And don't get me wrong, I mean, certainly I would not be shocked if he wins. He's certainly got it going for him. But I think you look at Creator as a big shot here. And the second choice, believe it or not, in this race is Exaggerator at 8-1. So it really depends on how it sets up. You know, typically in this race, you get a real hot pace, and you'll see somebody come from behind, and that's where actually Creator and Whitmore come from, which is my third choice. So I like the 3-10-11 here in the race. Looking forward to be a sloppy track. And again, one of the problems with taking a horse like a 2-1 in a big field like this is you never know what can happen in that track. Sloppy track, he's coming out of the 13 hole. Very tough. So I'm gonna go with the 3-10-11, which is Creator, Exaggerator, and Whitmore.
Okay, I like Gunrunner to win, honestly. 10-1 right now, a little bit of a long shot, but like you said, sloppy track, anything can happen. I do like Creator as well, 10-1. I think two pretty good horses, pretty highly rated. And I agree with you on the strategy of not betting the favorite. You know, I think if you want to bet a 3-1, 2-1 favorite, you know, go down to your local OTB. You can bet on as many races as you want. But I think in this particular race, you know, best value, I mean, sloppy track, I think you got to look at a couple horses, you know, not necessarily 50-1 shots, but, you know, horses that can come from the back a little bit, like you said, hot pace. It's going to be an interesting race. I mean, it always is. And I think this one's going to be a close one. I mean, you know, Nyquist is a great horse, but I think there's a couple other horses that'll sneak up on him. And I like Gunrunner, Creator, and I also like Whitmore. So I'm on the 5, 3, and 10. You know, I'll probably make a couple bets, maybe a couple boxes, and, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you know, listen, like I said, it's a big race, but it's a hard one to handicap for the favorite. And of course, there are horses that have no shot in the race. You know, usually you can tell where they come from, and then, you know, based on the conditions. But, you know, it's always a great race, a lot of fun. It'll be exciting, and it's obviously all the pageantry going with it. So it'll be fun, and we'll be watching it together, and we'll hopefully be cashing that ticket. We'll make the try box, and maybe we'll cash a nice one. You know, I got a question for you, though. You know, we know the draft is over, right? And the NFL is, you know, pretty good draft. Are you surprised? You know, you and I both said when Ezekiel Elliott got drafted number 4 or number 10. What the hell number did he get done? 4 or 10? I forgot.
4. Right? Very early.
And I go, wow, is he that much better than Henry? And you said, well, he's better. But now Henry didn't go until, what, 49?
Right.
So was he 45 picks better, in your opinion? I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously the scouts think so.
Right. Well, you know what? I mean, I don't think he's 45 picks better, but, I mean, the draft, it doesn't always go by, you know, player rankings. It's based off need. It's based off, you know, what they're trying to build for. I mean, so that's where, you know, I think the draft and the rankings get a little convoluted because, you know, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, I don't know if they were definitely not the best prospects out there, but, you know, both those teams at the top needed a quarterback, and for them, you know, to move forward the best way they thought possible, they took a quarterback. So were those two guys the top two, you know, if you want to say pound-for-pound players, or, you know, talent-wise in the draft? No, absolutely not. But, you know, that's just based off need. But, I mean, I thought, you know, like we talked about last week, I thought this pick by the Cowboys was definitely a little bit of a reach. I mean, I think they could have definitely gone defensive line. I mean, what's his name? Greg Hardy's gone, and, you know, he was a mess. I mean, great player, but the off-the-field issues, the on-the-field issues, I mean, too much to deal with. Randy Gregory, I mean, I'm not going to write him off yet, but, I mean, the guy's a nutcase. I mean, I think they could have gotten a great defensive player here, but they chose Elliott. I'm not going to fault them for that. I think this offense is going to be extremely high-powered next year. But I think the Cowboys are close. I think they're close to being a Super Bowl-caliber team, and I think one of their weaknesses definitely lies on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, I'm not going to trust Darren McFadden to carry my team in the running game next year, but they did sign Alfred Morris in the offseason. Say what you want about the guy as a six-round pick, but if you saw his first three seasons in Washington under Mike Shanahan, you know that the guy can play ball. I mean, by no means was that Washington Redskins line great, but, I mean, Mike Shanahan is the guru of making, you know, no-name running backs into big names. So, you know, I didn't love the pick by the Cowboys, and I think the value of Elliott was a little overrated in comparison to where he was taken in the draft. I mean, I thought he was more of a, you know, mid to late first round pick. But I do like him a little bit more than Derrick Henry. I think he's a little bit more elusive. I like his style a little more. I mean, Derrick Henry is a bruiser. I mean, the guy's 6'3", 250 pounds. Nobody's really getting in his way, but, you know, I do like Elliott a little better. I don't think they're that far away in their value. But, I mean, we've seen the game change in the past few years. I mean, you know, quarterbacks passing the ball is really taken over the league. And running backs, I think, have kind of taken a back seat in the NFL.
Well, I agree. I mean, last year we did see a couple of teams come back to the running back, you know, the St. Louis with Todd Gurley. And
they got nobody who could throw the ball. So.
Well, but you know what I mean. I mean, they were going that way if they had Joe Montana back there. They were still going.
Well, Jeff Fisher's still playing in 1995, so we need to update him.
He might still be in 85. That guy, he's one of the worst. I mean, a good coach. He's just not a good head coach. He's a good defensive coordinator. But you know, it's just interesting that, you know, there was a little bit of a switchback in some teams last year that do try to run the ball more. But I get what you're saying. Again, I understand the quarterback issue, okay, but I don't understand the running back issue. That is, you know, my thing. But we're going to talk more about this when we come back from the break, because it is almost that time. And, you know, you make sure, if you ever miss an episode of The Sporting Edge, you go to libertytalk.fm, where you get The Bubba Show. You can get The Sporting Edge. And, of course, we love sharing information with you, and always enjoy bringing it to you. So make sure you go download that show. And also, you know, during the week, check out The Bubba Show. And why don't you check out BubbaTrading.com while you're at it. We're going to step out here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Excuse me. It's The Sporting Edge, not The Bubba Show. This is The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. We will be right back after the break. The Sporting Edge.
This last bite. You don't get my soul, do you?
Technically. Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. So, anyways, Xander, quarterback is different. I mean, it's a different animal. They're built. Everything, the whole league has changed. So I can understand a reach for there, but running backs, I don't think you have to reach. There isn't anybody out there that is so much better. And as you commented, and we talked about a little bit before, Shanahan has taken six-round pick after six-round pick and made him a star. You know, turn him into a Hall of Fame-type running back. So I think it's more the scheme. And I think the Cowboys, you know, the Cowboys, they may be very close to a Super Bowl, but they're one good knock on Romo from being out. And he's now shown me that he's been injured more than he's been healthy over the last 5 years.
Right, and that's the problem. I mean, I love the Cowboys. I've always been a big fan of Tony Romo, and he's done some great things in the league. But, you know, like last year, it was the most frustrating thing that, you know, he gets injured and he comes back, and they're clinging on to life, and they might have a little bit of a shot, and he gets hurt again. And that's the problem. I mean, some people have said that the most important position in the NFL is the backup quarterback, and I can't say I totally agree, but there's definitely some, I could definitely shed some light on that theory, because when you see a guy, you know, go down, I mean, how brutal were the Cowboys when Romo went down? How brutal were the Colts that one year when Peyton Manning went down? I mean, guys like Matt Castle going 11-5, you know, for the Patriots that one year, that's kind of an anomaly. You really don't see that. So, I mean, quarterback position is so important. I mean, you can win without a great running back. You cannot win without an at least above-average quarterback. And, I mean, I think that's been proven, I think, time and time again in the NFL, with the exception of guys like Trent Dilfer winning the Super Bowl for the 2000 Baltimore Ravens.
He drove the bus with a good defense. But I mean, there's been guys over the years, you know, there was, you wouldn't remember this, but, you know, the Miami Dolphins' perfect season was mostly won by the backup quarterback, Earl Morrill. Okay?
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of instances, but you are correct, and there is, you know, the backup quarterbacks in today's world, because the quarterbacks become so valuable, is much bigger. I mean, look at some of the teams that can't even get a first-string quarterback, so it's hard to get that guy who can really perform at a high level as a backup. So
right, and talk about quarterbacks. You know, Los Angeles Rams owner Stan Kroenke recently made a comparison, you know, with Jared Goff and Kurt Warner. I thought this was really interesting, because Kurt Warner, I mean, say what you want about the guy, he was one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch of all time. I mean, the guy was a classic gunslinger. I mean, he threw the ball over the field, put up a lot of stats, and even late in his career with the Cardinals, I mean, he made Anquan Boldin and Larry Fitzgerald, you know, fantasy bombshells. I mean, they were awesome. And he recently made this comparison, you know, basically basing his assertion off vision, and that, you know, he saw Kurt Warner play coming out of a small school, was not a highly touted guy, but he noticed that he had some great vision, and he turned out, talking with Dick Vermeil, that he was right. And Kurt Warner, you know, kind of parlayed that into a Super Bowl championship with the Rams, operating one of the best offenses of all time. And he says that he sees the same thing in Jared Goff. So, I mean, time will tell, but you know what? The guy was right once. Maybe he'll be right again, and Jared Goff will be the next franchise quarterback for the Rams.
Well, I mean, you know, Warner was bagging groceries before he got the call, and look what happened. All of a sudden, he became a superstar. So, you know, it's the funny thing about sports. You never know when it's going to click, when it's going to happen, and maybe it will be. I mean, you know, I actually think Wentz is going to be pretty good myself, but, you know, we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, we're in the in the playoffs and the NBA, and, of course, there's talk of Curry coming back for Game 4. But do you think they should bring back Curry that early? Do you think – I mean, what's your opinion? I mean, they're basically drilling Portland anyways. Is there a reason to bring him back?
I really don't think so. I mean, this team is too good. I mean, they're much better than Portland, and they've shown it the first two games. I mean, the series hasn't been that great. I don't see any reason why you'd want to rush him back, especially with a 2-0 lead. I mean, you know, if they're 1-1, if they're down 0-2, which I don't think they ever would have been, but stuff like that, maybe I'd think about it. But, I mean, this team's clicking right now. I mean, they got a lot of good players, not named Steph Curry. I mean, he is, you know, the best player on the team, but I see no reason for it. I mean, they're outplaying Portland in almost every facet of the game. And, you know, I think the extra rest would definitely benefit Steph Curry, because, you know, coming up, you know, playing with a sore knee and whatnot, I don't think it's good for him, and I think they do the right thing by sitting him out. But if they do decide to play him, I would have every inclination that he's feeling well enough to play, because I don't think they would take that risk, you know, with the series going the way that it is right now.
Well, I hope not, because, again, obviously you always want to see everybody at their full strength. And, of course, you know, Cleveland looks like they're going to be a walkover. I mean, Cleveland looks like they may not lose a game all the way through until they get to the finals. I mean, they're playing well, and the East is so bad. You know, Miami and Toronto are going to be tied up in a battle. What do you think about the? I know you picked the Thunder. Okay, that was your team. You know, way back when, and here they are against San Antonio, and you know it's a good series. What do you think?
Interesting series. I mean, anybody who watched the end of game two, I mean, that was one of the craziest plays I've ever seen. I mean, we get the inbounds play. There's a clear push off. And that doesn't get called against Manu Ginobili. There's people falling on the floor. Kevin Durant's on the floor. We get a drive to the bucket. We get a game-winning shot on the line that doesn't go in, and it ends up being a loss for the Spurs. But, I mean, that was one of the crazier endings I think I've ever seen with a Spurs team that was down a lot of points in the last couple minutes. So a great game. The series gets tied up at 1-1. But, I mean, I think the Thunder are in the driver's seat a little bit right now. I mean, if you look at LaMarcus Aldridge, he's playing some of the best basketball he's ever played. You know, doing a lot of reading, you know, CBS Sports, ESPN, they got a couple articles out that, you know, this kind of playing into what the Thunder wanted to do. Because when you look at an offense like the Spurs, they really operate their best when they're clicking on all cylinders. Every guy's getting involved. And you see LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, 79 points in, you know, 75 minutes. But he's got, you know, a minus four margin when he's on the floor and the team, and he's with the team on the floor. So I think this is kind of playing into the Thunder strategy. I mean, they're letting him run a one man show, but I mean that's kind of what they want. They said they're not going to get beat by one man. Just like, you know, in baseball, hit as many solo home runs as you want. We're not going to get beat by solo home runs. And I think, you know, game three, game four, these are pivotal games. And I think the team that wins game four is going to take this series, and I think that's going to be the Thunder. I mean, these are two great teams. I think the Spurs are a little bit better of a team. Thunder, I think, have a little more firepower, and we'll see how this works with Aldridge in the next couple games, because I don't see him staying as hot as he has been, but, you know, maybe he will. But, I mean, like I said, I don't think that really has affected, you know, the outcomes of these games, because his plus-minus is, you know, right around zero.
Do you think that the Spurs are maybe just getting a little bit old? I mean, you know, obviously.
I mean, they've been getting old for 6 years, and here they are.
I mean, but
know,
at some point, you know, at some point,
finals every year.
No, I'm with you, but at some point, I mean, Tony Parker and Duncan, they were big parts of the team. I mean, they're really laboring out here. So, I mean, you know, again, I'm not saying they are, but you know, unfortunately, when you slow down, age doesn't announce itself either. You know, and it's just. Maybe, the, you know, Durant and Westbrook are awfully good, and so are the components of that team. So, you know, they're a lot younger. So they have a lot more energy, you know. So, again, I'm just...
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I think, you know, the biggest X factor for the Spurs is Kawhi Leonard. I think, you know, probably the best defender in the NBA. Pretty young guy. I mean, you know, him, Aldridge, you know, they need to do some things if they want to win this series, because it's not going to be easy. And you can see that game one and two. I mean, these were all-out wars, and these teams are both at, you know, at the top of their game. So we'll see what happens. But I see the Thunder winning in seven, and I'm going to stick to that prediction.
No, you made listen. You made that prediction a long time ago. So again, I'm sure I knew you weren't going to change it. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you know, like I said, they're awfully good. And they're really solid, and you know, this is to, I guess, you know, one roadblock, and I think that's one of the issues that could obviously benefit Cleveland if Cleveland stays healthy. You know, they're gonna get, you know, because when you get down to those, every round you get down, the pounding and the beating gets more and more, and you know, if you've got to go through tough series to try to get there, which is always makes it a problem, and it beats down the guys, you know what I mean?
Right, and look, it's funny about the Cleveland series, game two the other night, you know, Atlanta Hawks came on after the game, you know, questioning the class of the Cleveland Cavaliers after they put up a record 25 three-pointers in that game, and that just kind of shocks me. That pisses me off. you know, you're in the playoffs, you're, you know, in a playoff game, you're going to get beat, give up 73 points at half and get your brain bashed in, and you're going to complain about class by the other team. You know, don't give up 25 threes. I mean, it's a record-breaking performance. You're in the playoffs. I mean, play like it.
Well,
I mean,
they didn't last year either. They're a great regular season team, as proved last year, but when it comes to playing for the money, they're not very good. This is the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We're going to step by here for a break. We will be right back. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download every weekend The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We'll be right back.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. And Xander, I guess, you know, there's a couple things in baseball that we obviously want to cover, a lot of baseball, but there's a couple things I think I want to go over first. And the first thing is there's debate on whether expansion, Manfred's looking at some cities. And, you know, I'm really against expansion. I mean, they can't get, you got enough teams now that suck. I mean, what are we going to get now? More garbage to watch? I mean, you know, I don't get it, okay? You know, if we had an abundance of talent, I could understand it. But eventually, nobody wants to go out and watch bad teams play. And that's what happens when you have these too much expansion. There's not enough players to go around. What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you, but I think if expansion is going to happen, I think it needs to happen the right way. I mean, I think you need to have, you know, a good owner. You need to have a good marketing team. I think you need to have a good fan base. I think you need to make sure a lot of things are in place before it happens. I mean, you know, you look at, there is a lot of teams around the league. You know, you look at the Tampa Bay Rays, Miami Marlins, Chicago White Sox, teams that just consistently don't draw any fans. And it doesn't, it's not necessarily, you know, to say that the teams aren't any good. I mean, you look at the White Sox, arguably one, you know, the best team in the league, not behind the Cubs, obviously, but second best, and they still don't draw any fans. I think some of it has to do with location. So that brings me back to my point. If they're going to expand, I think they need to set up, you know, a concrete, you know, well-done plan that's going to bring, you know, revenue, bring fans in, to where they want to go. And I think they're talking about going back out to Montreal, bringing back the Expos. And obviously, you know, I was a little bit too young to really get into the Expos at all. I mean, I don't think they've been in the league for 10 years or something like that. But
they were replaced by the Nationals.
Right, right. But I think if they have a good plan and a good base, I'm all for expansion. I mean, I honestly, I love the old-time Expos jersey. I was thinking about buying a Vladimir Guerrero baby blue Expos jersey the other day. So I'm a fan of it if they've got a good plan in place. But like you said, nobody wants to see a bunch of crappy teams with bad fan bases run out there.
You'll get a Rusty Staub jersey. You'll see a game he played in that he couldn't even throw, but he was so valuable that he had to underhand the ball to the other outfielder. Okay, but and that was a playoff game as well, by the way. And you know, a lot of big stars came through Montreal. But now, Anaheim Angels, Heaney down, who knows when he's coming back. Garrett Richards, Tommy John. Okay, Pujols stinks. The whole team stinks. Do you trade Mike Trout?
Wow. I've thought about the rumors. I've heard about it. I didn't even think about the answer to this question, but I would say yeah. I think so. I think this team is heading in the wrong direction. I think they had a small window the past few years, or they might have been able to sneak and make a run at it, and they haven't done it. They haven't done it for a long time. They don't have a lot of good players. Mike Trout, far and away, their best player. Pitching, going downhill. I know this team's right around 500, but I don't think they compete with the rest of the West this year. I mean, Seattle is playing out of their minds right now, but I don't think this team is anywhere near the Texas Rangers in the near future, and I honestly would trade Mike Trout. I think he could get a shitload of crap for him, pardon my French, but, I mean, the guy, I think you could say over the past 4 years, is hands down the best player in baseball. He's young, he's talented, he's got all five tools, and I just think this Angels team, although it would be really tough to let a guy like that go, I think they're just going in the complete wrong direction, and I think it would be a waste for their organization and for Mike Trout's career in terms of, you know, playoff success if they were to keep him. Because I think this team has no chance, even if they were to make the playoffs, which I don't think they will, constantly getting out in the first round, I think it'd be a good move by them.
I agree 100%. I mean, they could get a king's ransom for him. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, any team that would be close. I mean, do you imagine what the Dodgers might give up for a Mike Trout?
I can't even imagine. I've probably never seen that much money in my life.
You know, but I mean, I'm just talking about even the players they would give up to get a guy like that. I mean, here's a guy. Listen, you know, Bryce Harper is going to sign his big contract next year, and, you know, they're talking $400 million, okay? Mike Trout is only in, the second or third year of his first big contract, and he's going to be due up before he's 30 to get the next one. And, you know, as we know, he had a slow start to the year, and all of a sudden, he's back up among, you know, hitting close to 300. He's got, I think, 20-something RBIs. So, very interesting as we see things going on. And I think that would be, look, you put him somewhere because anybody would give up to get a guy like that and get him under contract. Anybody would be wanting, I think any team that had a shot would want him. Okay.
Right, and that's what also makes me so salty about the huge Pujols contract. I mean, that I thought was going to be the stepping stone to make the Angels one of the most powerful teams in the AL, and it just didn't happen. And now we're sitting here paying off Pujols, you know, to basically be a shell of what he used to be. I mean, the guy still has a lot of power, but nowhere near that 10-year stretch he had with the Cardinals that was, you know, arguably the best stretch ever in baseball.
That's why St. Louis lets guys go, because they know that they can't be valued. But, and we'll get off the Angels, but the last part of that is that the owner was a dope anyways. You know, signed Josh Hamilton to all that dough and all these other yokels instead of building a team. But so how about them Cubbies? Let's talk about the Cubbies. Let's talk about the Cubbies and the White Sox. But how about them Cubbies?
I mean, I think I saw yesterday that the fourth best start according to run differential in the history of baseball. I mean, they're, I think, 40 or 50 runs ahead of the next best team, I think, which is the Nationals. I mean, this team is, the best team in the league right now by a mile. I mean, hitting and pitching and defensive-wise, give me a team that's anywhere close, and I'll tell you you're wrong, because there's no other team that's playing at the caliber the Cubs are right now.
It's amazing. I mean, you listen to guys talk, and they're talking that they could win. They're talking about they could set the record. I think it's 112 that the Seattle Mariners hit I can't remember the year, but that was the year they got knocked out by the White Sox in first round. But, I mean, you know, it's amazing. They go out there and on a Thursday night, Kendrick throws a two-hitter for six innings, and they beat Washington, and then they kick the shit out of Scherzer and blow his ass out of the water. I mean, you know, they're just unbelievable. And they keep finding new guys to step up. All of a sudden, Ben Zobrist, who was taking a nap, found his home run swing. He's got three homers in the last 2 days.
Right. And then you look at, you know, Lester and Arrieta are just having unbelievable seasons. I think they got a combined ERA of around 1.2 right now. Hamill's throwing well. You got Hendricks and, of course, Lackey. You know, things are pretty much firing on all cylinders right now for the Cubs. I mean, take a look at the rest of the NL Central. I do worry about the Cardinals. I don't think this team is the same team that we've seen for the past few years. I think they're hanging on a little bit right now, playing okay baseball, but, you know, haven't beaten really the teams that they're going to need to beat in the playoffs to, you know, advance. And, you know, they beat some crappy teams. I mean, we're almost 30 games in now. We're almost 20% into the season, so the season's really starting to take shape. But meanwhile, the Pirates aren't doing much either. But, you know, they're both about 7 games back. I think the Cubs win this division, but I'm not one to, you know, make predictions about, you know, 120 games from now. I mean, I would love to say, you know, the Cubs are going to do great things, but I just kind of want to watch the season because, you know, I hate people who come on the air and talk about the Cubs winning the World Series and whatnot. You know, it hasn't happened for over 100 years, so I don't want to hear anything about it because we're 30 games into this season, so nothing has been accomplished yet, really. I mean, you can't win the World Series in the first month of the season, but you can lose it. So the fact that the Cubs are hanging around right now and playing some great baseball is very encouraging. But how about the White Sox? I mean, this team, I didn't think had anywhere near this potential at the start of the year. I thought they were going to be pretty good, you know, maybe ranging around 85 wins, be a couple games over 500. Because I thought that really last year was their year to shine. But they've been playing some great baseball this year, and they don't have a guy in the starting lineup hitting over 300. Now, if that sounds familiar, that's because nobody on a 2005 White Sox team starting lineup was hitting over 300, and they won the World Series, swept the Astros in 4 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, and of course, I mean, listen, Rodon and Quintana. I mean, Quintana couldn't win last year, pitched good, couldn't get a win, and all of a sudden, you know, he's 4-1. Chris Sale's 6-0. I mean, you know, you're getting, look, as you and I have said many, many times, and, you know, pitching and defense, running the ball, everything in defense, okay? Because if you can prevent the other team from scoring, you don't have to hit 300. And that's, you know, something that always is in my eyes, is the number one thing, and that's the number one thing I look at when I'm looking to make an investment in anything, is if they can defend, then they got a better chance, because at the end of the day, if you got a good pitcher, you can keep the team in the game. You know, you can always feel good about it, and that's what I look for. And the Sox are getting great pitching. Have a little trouble with that fifth starter. They tried Gonzalez, and they sent Danks back down, and now they're, the new guy they brought up on Thursday got beat. So I don't know what they're going to do there. Latos has been an unbelievable surprise. I mean, really a good pitcher, but really scuffed around the last couple of years. But we're going to step out here for a break. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. Make sure you get the download version at libertytalk.fm. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We'll be right back after the break. The Sporting Edge. Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. So go ahead, Xander. I know you have one more thing to talk about in the White Sox.
Right. And I think a big key to their success is using Adam Eaton, the leadoff hitter. I mean, the guy has, I think, the third or fourth highest WAR in baseball, really keeping this team afloat on the offensive end. Because, I mean, you know, Jose Abreu playing, you know, hitting about 250, not great. Todd Frazier, you know what? Todd Frazier is hitting about 200, but the guy does have 7 home runs and 20 RBIs already. So if, you know, if he's going to hit 220 but hit 35 home runs and drive in 100-120 guys, I could live with that. Because, like I said, I am a second-tier White Sox fan. I do like to see the Chicago teams do well. But, yeah, I mean, they got some guys like Melky Cabrera. I mean, they've got guys who have done some things in their career, and I think, like you said, that there's one thing that's going to be their Achilles heel. It's going to be that fifth starter because they just really haven't found one yet. John Danks was terrible. I mean, it's just atrocious. And I thought Miguel Gonzalez could be a guy. I mean, he did do some good things in Baltimore last year. I actually watched the whole game on Thursday night. Eric Johnson, you know, looked very average. You know, righty fastball in the low 90s. Just nothing really overpowering, nothing to make me, you know, wow. So I think they're going to need to find that guy. And I think they might find him, you know, before the trade deadline. Well, I think they're going to need to make a move.
I thought they bum rushed Miguel Gonzalez out pretty quick. I mean, they only signed and they brought him for one game. He had one. The first thing was a bad inning. He pitched pretty good from there. But again, it is what it is, you know. But I think as you look around, are you worried about Kansas City? If you're a Kansas City fan, they have not looked very sharp, and they're making a lot of errors, which is very uncharacteristic of them.
I'm not worried yet. I mean, they're not pulling a Houston right now, and you know, or 10 games under 500. I mean, they're right around 500. I think they're going to stay in it. I mean, White Sox, they're playing some unbelievable baseball right now. I don't know if they keep up this pace. But, I mean, the AL Central, I think, is still pretty wide open. They got three teams tied, you know, four games back of the Sox. I'm not worried about Kansas City yet, but, you know, we have this conversation a month from now, and, you know, they're six or seven games back. I mean, that's another 20% of the season. So we'll see where it goes from here, but I think they pick it up. I mean, I don't think you win the World Series. They have a lot of pieces stayed on that team. I don't think it just drops off after 1 year. I think that'd be a pretty big anomaly. So I don't worry about it. I could see, though, how you could worry a little bit about it, though, but I think they're fine, you know, 14 and 13.
I think their record's fine. I just think they're a little sloppier than usual, and that, you know, typically, now maybe it's just a rough patch, but, you know, you don't see them making 3-4 errors in a game. And but, hey, now, the big question, you know, in all sports all week this week was, are the Yankees sellers? Is it time to kiss the Yankees goodbye?
I do. I think it's time. I mean, we actually had this conversation last week, you know, saying this is probably the most important week of the season for the Yankees because they played a lot of games against division opponents, and they stunk. They stunk it up. They're 7 games back now. They're 2-8 in their last 10. Had a lot of chances, and you played the Red Sox in some huge games, and they blew it. They didn't do shit with it, and you know, now they're sitting 7 games back. Boston, on the other hand, had a great week. Is 8-2 in their last 10. Baltimore is 1 game back. You get Toronto at 500, who's I think probably still the most dangerous team in that division. So, I mean, I think the Yankees, you know, putting CC Sabathia on the DL, got a bunch of old farts out there, and A-Rod, who's on the DL, Teixeira. I think it's time. I think the Yankees are sellers. I think they put themselves in the coffin this week, and is it possible they could have a miraculous comeback and, you know, roll off 15 out of 20 or something like that? It is. But I think with this pitching staff, which is pretty weak, I don't think it's going to matter. I mean, they got some of the best relievers in the game. I don't think anybody would argue with you about that. But, you know, if you don't have a lead, you know, what's the point of having a good setup and closer, you know, if you can't get a lead? So I think this Yankee team has a lot to sell. I mean, you look at the back end of their bullpen. I mean, who wouldn't want, you know, Andrew Miller, Dylan Betances, or Chapman? I know they just got Chapman, but, I mean, the season is quickly taking a much bigger U-turn than I think they thought it would.
I agree with that as well, and I think that's something. And of course, Baltimore's kind of hanging there, but as you said, the Red Sox are coming, and Seattle playing out of their mind, and Texas gets beat on 2 walk-offs back-to-back, and then they get shellacked. Should we be concerned about Texas, or is that just another one of those things for a quick short series?
I think that's just one of those things in a series. You know, if you get beat, that happens. Derek Holland actually was having a great year. I mean, the guy was 3-1 with a, you know, a 2-4, 2-5, and just came out and got shelled. And usually, I mean, you don't usually see an ace, a Chris Sale caliber guy get shelled that bad. I wouldn't put Derek Holland anywhere near that category. But, you know, guys who are pitching well do come out there and occasionally get shellacked. And, I mean, that's just part of the game. I mean, for whatever reason, your stuff's off, you're leaving stuff up in the zone. It happens. I mean, and his line was brutal. I looked at him up on my phone, you know, 2 2/3, 11 hits, 11 earned, 3 walks, no Ks. I mean, that is quite a line, but I don't think it's anything to worry about. I think this race will come down to Texas and Seattle. I don't think Oakland or Houston has the firepower. I mean, Houston is just completely reverted from what they were last year. I mean, they can't pitch. Hitting has been okay, but
they're awful.
I mean, they look terrible.
But they just, you know what, they deserve what they get, because, you know, they really, you know, as you know, I'm a big guy who hates when coaches try to outthink the game, and they make a trade. I mean, they traded for Giles for one reason, and they started school with him, and he's getting lit up because they didn't leave him to what they hired him for, basically. And I think that's a problem, and I think that's part of the problem with the entire makeup of the team. I mean, you know, they've got some nice players, but I think you affect the psyche of your players when you do things like that. What do you think?
Right, yeah, I don't agree with that. And, I mean, it's showing right now. I mean, nothing's going right for them. I mean, if you would have told me that they were going to start 10 and 20, I don't know if I would have believed it. I mean, after how they played last year, I mean, they were firing on all cylinders. But, I mean, when you don't pitch You know, this stuff like this happens, and you get it. You know, starters ERA is combined, I think, almost over five. It's hard to win games because it's hard to come back, and it's hard being in the lineup. You know, you're down, you know, a few runs early in the game. It's hard to come back from that, and none of their pitchers are really throwing well, especially Dallas Keuchel.
Fairs had an 8-run lead. He couldn't even stay into the fifth inning. So that's what shows you. How about the Colorado Rockies? I mean, they're only 14-14, but Nolan Arenado, Trevor Story, but their pitching has been pretty damn good. What do you think?
It has been pretty damn good, and that's what kind of surprised me. I mean, I looked at their roster beginning of the year, didn't think there's going to be really anything exciting on the pitching side of the ball. I mean, they do have some great hitters. Nolan Arenado, I think, you know, quickly becoming, I think, one of my favorite players to watch in baseball. I mean, the guy is young and just drops bombs, so there's really nothing not to like about him. But, I mean, guys like Trevor Story, I mean, he's still got Cargo, who is a proven veteran in this league. They're pretty fun to watch right now.
Yeah, it's a great division. I mean, top to bottom is three games. San Diego's only, after that brutal start, San Diego's only 2.5 games out, and you know, the Giants and Dodgers are scuffling. But, of course, the last division. How about the Phillies? I mean, everybody put them into, they were dead, and I'm not saying they're going to win anything, but they're certainly playing pretty good for a team that they basically were writing off the season this year.
Right. They're playing unbelievable, I think, in comparison to what they have on paper. I mean, they don't score any runs. There's no doubt about that. I think they got, you know, the least amount of runs scored in the majors, or second or third least. But, I mean, they're playing some defense, and they're pitching the ball great. Got a bad differential, but, I mean, they're over 500. There's nothing not to like about that. I mean, and this division, I don't want to say it's up for grabs right now because, I mean, Washington's playing great baseball.
The Mets are playing great, too. They're it's going to come down to the Washington Mets, and it just goes to show you what a great coach Dusty Baker is. I never liked him as a coach. I think he's a great players guy, but he just never seemed to be able to get to the big step. But, unfortunately, we have run out of time. This is the Sporting Edge, and, you know, we always enjoy coming here and enjoy the Kentucky Derby. Always a great race. Remind you, we like the 3-5-10-11, which is Creator, Exaggerator, Whitmore, and who's your horse?
Gunrunner.
Gunrunner. That's our trifecta box. Everybody have a great weekend and enjoy everything. We'll see you back here next week. This is the Sporting Edge with Bum and Zander. Make sure you download at libertytalk.fm. We'll see you back next week, same time, same station. Have a great weekend, everybody. The Sporting Edge with Bob and Zinner. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.